You've written a great book. Now, how do you get people to read it? At Poised Pen Productions, we specialize in connecting readers to your work with personalized and affordable marketing and promotional services. Customized book trailers, cover graphics, bookmarks, mugs, and more. Visit www.poisedpenproductions.com or check out Poised Pen.
Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack, and good evening to our listeners in the UK. Welcome to Women Writers Month during this Women's History Month. I'm proud to have with me some of the best women writers in the world this month, with one exception, and that's tomorrow night when Jeffrey Deaver joins me. However, before we get started, I'd like to introduce to you now my delightful guest co-host. Libby Fisher-Hellman is an award-winning author of compulsively readable thrillers. With 13 novels and 20 short stories published, she also has written suspense mysteries, historicals, PI novels, amateur sleuth, police procedurals, and even a cozy mystery. Her new book is called Jump Cut, which has already won a starred review from Publishers Weekly. You can see more about Libby at her website at libbyhellman.com. It's my pleasure to introduce my colleague, my friend, and my guest co-host for the night, Libby Fisher-Hellman. Hi, Libby. How are you?
I'm just peachy, Pam. How are you doing?
I'm
can't
wonderful.
Wait to see you soon.
I know. I can't. Libby's coming down to Florida for book tour, so if you're in the Lee County area and you're listening to me, be sure to get in touch with me so I can tell you all the places Libby's going to be. Libby, you know our guest today very, very well, and through you, I've had the pleasure of meeting her several times. Zoe Sharp is from the UK. She's here to celebrate Women Writers Month with us. Her success came in 2001 with the publication of Killer Instinct, the first book to feature her ex-Special Forces heroine, Charlotte Charlie Fox. Later Charlie Fox novels, First Drop and Fourth Day, were finalists for the Barry Award, which is and for the British Best British Crime Novel. The series has been optioned for TV. As well as the novels, Zoe's stories have been published in anthologies and magazines and have been shortlisted for the Short Story Dagger in the UK Crime Writers Association. Her other writing has been nominated for the coveted Edgar from Mystery Writers of America, the Anthony presented by BoucherCon, World Mystery Convention, the McCavity, and the Benjamin Franklin Award from the Independent Book Publishers Association. It is my pleasure to welcome two authors on the air for the first time, incidentally, the wonderful, wonderful award-winning author, Zoe Sharp. Good evening, Zoe. How are you?
Good evening, Pam. Thank you so much for inviting me to join you both.
I can't think of anybody who I would like to have on here more. It's so funny that we've been friends for a few years now, and you've never been on my show, and it's just so strange.
I was starting to take it personally.
Oh, please don't. Please never take it personally. And always call and say, I need to come on the show. I have a new book. So,
well, that's okay. This is Libby. She's been on my show twice, so that makes up for it.
Well, no, it really doesn't, you know, because you talk to her a lot more often than I do. You know,
okay,
I'm not
come on.
Calling.
Good clean fight, you two. Good clean fight.
That's right. And speaking of fights, one of the things that I love whenever I see Zoe at one of the conferences, the first time was Levitt Murder and then again at BoucherCon last year, is Zoe is very trained in self-defense, very well trained. And Zoe always gives a demonstration to those who are not well-trained in self-defense at conferences. And I have to tell you, Robert, who was your victim, victim/attacker over at Love is Murder, was hysterical.
Robert Zoe, Goldsboro, right?
Right, Robert Goldsboro. So, Zoe, tell us a little bit about you personally and your how skilled you are at self-defense, please.
Well, one of the sort of best ways of self-defense, or the best means of self-defense, is never to need it. So I always try and bear in mind that if I actually ever got to the stage of having to physically grapple with somebody, then my outer layers of self-defense would have failed. So you always have to maintain that sort of state of awareness to avoid putting yourself in those awkward situations, because then you have to work out how to get out of them, and that's always much more difficult. But so
but
many people I see... So many people
I
see walking around. Well, you should always be aware of your surroundings. If you're walking along with your head down, looking at your mobile phone all the time, sorry, I'll speak American, cell phone, then you're not paying attention to who's walking behind you, what's happening around you. If I have to check my cell phone when I'm out walking around, I tend to stop and I'll stand with my back to a building to check my cell phone. So okay. I'm never going to get people creeping up behind me. So those are your outer layers. It's basic common sense, but it's very easy for people to ignore those. They get a little bit complacent and maybe they're just a bit too comfortable in their situation. And before they know it, they say, "He came out of nowhere." Well, unless he's been beamed down from another planet, he can't have come out of nowhere. So there will always be a warning sign somewhere.
You know, Zoe, I'm interested in you saying that, particularly about using mobile phones, because...
Oh, you speak English. English.
I do.
Rather than American.
I do. Yes, darling, of course. I'm thinking particularly of how many times we've heard about date rape drugs and women who are unawares that they might be in a bar somewhere or a nightclub. They might be on a phone. They might not be paying any attention, and someone spikes their drink. Particularly people, and I'm sure you do too, sitting across from each other, texting or doing that location stuff, which I think is crazy anyway. Particularly important for women to have a set of skills, basic skills, to protect themselves, correct?
I think so. And it's not just the sort of having the physical skills. It's also, it gives you the self-confidence that you don't have this invisible bubble over your head with victim written in it, which some people go around with. And okay, that's not always the case. There are always people who were being very careful and were just very unlucky.
Right.
But nevertheless, most of the time, you know, you can project this "don't mess with me" air, and people will step off the sidewalk and go around you.
That's what I've heard other experts say. Your character, Charlie Fox, is a close protection agent. And I wonder, did your skill set come about prior to writing Charlie, or did it come after writing Charlie? And how do you incorporate your skill set with Charlie Fox?
Well, really, the whole thing kind of arrived at the same time. I'd always wanted to write crime. But when I was first starting out, I was a little bit too kind of shy and embarrassed. I know it's difficult to believe about me, to go and talk to my local police and ask them lots of questions about how do you go about doing your job, especially when I'd nothing, you know, up front to say, "Here, look, I'm already a writer." So I felt I couldn't do that. And I wanted a profession that would give somebody the excuse of being involved with crime, but not necessarily a law enforcement professional. So the close protection industry, I've always found absolutely fascinating. So I came up with the idea of Charlie, who originally started out teaching self-defense. But at the same time, I was also working as a photojournalist. And as part of my job, I received death threat letters. And that really made me think, it's time I learned some serious self-defense. So the two kind of went hand in hand. And once you start to learn the techniques, the latent writer in me kind of thought, there are some amazing situations you could set up in which you could use these techniques. So everything happened at the same time.
It was kind of serendipitous for you, wasn't it?
Very much
learned
so.
About this. Now, Sean Black also writes a character who is a close protection agent, and he went through the UK school. I guess there's a school that you can go to for this particular type of security work. And much like you, he says it's a really interesting job. And the things that close security agents and close security protection folks learn. Now, you also are quite a marksmith also. You practice quite a bit with a variety of weapons, don't you?
Yes, I don't do as much anymore, unfortunately. I used to competition shoot in the UK, but after the various events we had at Hungerford and then Dunblane, we had a school shooting at Dunblane, and there was a blanket ban on handgun ownership completely. And apart from things like shotguns for clay pigeon, I think you'd call it skeet, they were really banned in the UK. So it's become very difficult to shoot over here. And therefore, I tend to try and take the opportunity whenever I go to the States to find a local gun range and go shoot something.
Another thing that I draw a lot of parallels between you and your character, Charlie Fox, and maybe that's supposed to be the way it is, maybe not, but you also are very fond of fast vehicles, whether it's two-wheeled or four-wheeled. And I am too. I always have been fascinated by that. I know that you have a motorcycle. You love to go fast. How did that also play a part in building Charlie's character?
This could be played back in court, you know.
I promise I'm going to say I've never seen any of these vehicles, these fast vehicles.
I have.
Yes, and there, but, Your Honor, rests the case for the defense. yes, things happen very differently when you get over 100 miles an hour. I've heard, allegedly.
Right.
But it's also making Charlie a motorcyclist. I mean, it seems to have become a little bit of a cliche in that every kind of tough woman you see on TV is riding a motorcycle. But it was very much a conscious decision when I was first writing the books, which was really the late 1990s when I started researching the character, to make her a motorcyclist, because you are so at risk from other road users and you are so vulnerable, and you have to have that awareness of your surroundings, even the weather, which you don't get. You're sitting in your car, you're not really aware of the weather. And I know, lucky you in Florida, Pam, you don't tend to get ice and snow, but they make a huge difference to the road conditions. I mean, Libby, you're in Illinois, so you will be well aware of what happens when it starts to snow. And people just fall off the road because they're not driving according to the conditions and they're not aware of their surroundings. And I wanted to make Charlie have that level of inbuilt awareness before she even starts training for the job as in close protection.
Let's talk about Charlie Fox. How did you come up with her character?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I used to read a lot of the sort of classic thrillers of the 60s and 70s. And I found that a lot of the female characters tended to be there to be the love interest for the hero, scream in a firefight, tend to the wounded, and really, and twist their ankle and have to be rescued. And I really started to get quite annoyed by this. And I couldn't seem to find the kind of independent, self-sufficient female character. And I almost object to calling them strong. I mean, it tends to be a category, strong female characters. But you wouldn't say that about a male character.
No, you
wouldn't. Strong male. Well, why should you have to specify that about a female character? They can take care of themselves. They're not reliant on other people. And because of their gender, they're quite often underestimated. And that struck me as a sort of a nice position to have your main character in a book. But really, Charlie just arrived and more or less sat me down and said, I have a story to tell and you are going to want to listen.
How many Charlie Fox books are there right now, Zoe?
Well, I am writing number 12 at the moment.
So Charlie has a lot of stories to tell, doesn't she?
She does. Yeah, she keeps holding me at gunpoint, and what can I do?
You must write. You must write.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what are the – let's talk about the ancillary characters. I don't want to say they're not lead characters because they are, but Charlie has a very interesting relationship to the guy who runs the company that she works for. So will you tell us about him too, please?
Well, initially she started working for a guy called Sean Mayer, who comes up right from the early books, although he doesn't actually appear until the second one. And he was her training instructor when she was in the military. Now, she gets thrown out of the military, more or less in disgrace, and there were some cases over here with a training camp called Deep Cut that were very much in the forefront of my mind when I was writing the early books. But her relationship with Sean is quite difficult. He is in one of the later books. I try not to give away spoilers, but in one of the later books, he is quite badly injured. He has a head injury, and their relationship is altered by that. And particularly in the 12th book, which is the one I'm writing at the moment, that her past is kind of going to catch up with her. I revisit a few characters that were in the early books, and things are going to have to come to a bit of a head in this one, I think.
Interesting. It's very interesting. How much research do you have to do for your book, Zoe?
I do a huge amount of research, and then I try and leave about 90% of it out. Otherwise, you end up writing a textbook or a travelogue or a guidebook to something. It's knowing what the authentic 10% is that you need to leave in there. When I wrote one of the books you mentioned earlier that was a finalist for the Barry Award, a book called Fourth Day, it was set in a cult in California. And I did a huge amount of reading up about things like Waco and Ruby Ridge and things like that, and spoke to the people who'd been inside cults, and also to SWAT team members about how they would go about, getting into that kind of a fortified compound. So it was a very interesting. I mean, we're writers because we're nosy, and I think we.
Right.
People say write about what you know, and actually I disagree with that. If you write about what you know, well, that can be a little boring. So you write about the things you want to find out about, because then you can indulge your inherent nosiness and curiosity and go and find all this fascinating information.
Interesting. I think that we're going to hear a lot more of Charlie. How do you decide which stories Charlie wants to tell? How do you winnow out the ideas that you have? Because I know that you're a very creative person. I know you read voraciously. I know that you have many interests besides just motorcycles and fast cars. You like the water. You like a lot of different things. So you must have a lot of ideas. How do you pick and choose which idea will become your next book?
That's a very interesting question, and I'm never entirely sure. I've had a little break from writing over the last 18 months or so, and now I'm back full swing into the next Charlie Fox book, and it feels very good to be back in that world with that character. But the bones for this were laid in the previous book, which was a three-quarter length novella called Absence of Light. And I knew Charlie was going to be in the Middle East looking for Sean, who they thought had perhaps gone on the rampage. And that was my starting point for this book. But I do try and lay in either characters or features or something like that, you know, at least a book ahead, so that I know I'm not suddenly magicking some aspect of the character's life out of nowhere, just for the purposes of that book.
When you're writing Charlie, does Charlie age as your books come out, or does she stay in the same age, much like Sue Grafton keeps her character?
Well, the character does age, but inevitably the passage of time, if you're writing a series that is chronological, the passage of time is slower than reality.
Right.
Because, for instance, I think the first book came out, for example, if the first book came out and it was set in the summer, and the following book came out probably 12 or 18 months later, but was actually set the following winter, then in book time, only 6 months have passed, even though in real time, it could be a year or even 2 years. So the character is aging, but at a decelerating rate compared to the book.
Right.
And you have be a little bit careful that you don't get left behind by that.
Right. Are there more layers of Charlie for us to learn about that we don't know?
She is quite a complex character. I mean, I've tried to make her a very human character rather than just, it was a lovely phrase I heard, a guy in nylons, which you can find some female equivalent tough guys who are just a guy in nylons. And I've tried to make her a very real person. So she doesn't absorb injury and just leap up and recover one mighty bound. Violence has consequences, and I wanted to show that for this character, both psychological and physical consequences, because if you put violence into books, there is always the danger that it's going to be in some way gratuitous. And although I don't pull any punches in these books, it's not cartoon violence. It does have an effect.
Right. What would you like us to know about Charlie Fox that we don't already know? Without a spoiler, I mean, what is the thing that, then let me ask you this, what is the thing that makes Charlie tick?
That's a very good question. I think initially she was looking for respect. She'd lost her own sense of self-respect with the circumstances that led to her dismissal from the army. She learned that she had the ability to take a life. And I think then possibly she was looking for redemption. And now there is the faint possibility she's looking for revenge. But I'll know that when I finish the book.
Interesting. Redemption is a really big thing with a lot of thrillers, don't you think? And motivation.
It can become a little bit of a cliche. You know, if you see a cop in a movie, he's always made a mistake which led to somebody getting killed. And the plot revolves around him trying to regain that lost sense
a
of his own ability.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to break in here because Chris Kling and Zoe and I have had this conversation a lot, and Chris made this observation, which I think it still holds up. Men tend to want redemption in their thrillers. Women tend to want respect and recognition. We don't have anything to atone for. We just want to be taken seriously, whereas the men, the trope is, yeah, they made a mistake and they want to be redeemed for it.
Okay, so let's hold that thought because that's a great segue into our next segment. I want to just take a moment to remind you that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. If you have questions for Zoe, please call in at 347-633-9609. I would like very much to turn the microphone over to Libby Fisher-Hellman right now, who is a very good friend with Zoe Sharp. And I'm glad that you said that last comment. You talked about the differences in characters, but now I think I'd like for you to talk about the differences between female thriller writers and male thriller writers. So, Libby, the microphone is yours.
Oh, well, thank you, Pam. First, I want to define what we're talking about in terms of thrillers, because there are a whole lot of romance authors out there who write romantic suspense who consider themselves thriller writers, and they are. And there's also Zoe, and, you know, you've probably read them. You know, there's a new kind of subgenre called domestic thrillers. It's not new, but because of the popularity of Gillian Flynn and the woman that wrote The Girl on the Train, there are now a lot of female-driven thrillers where the narrator is somewhat unreliable. And I don't think we're talking about those. Or at least I'm not.
No.
I'm talking about good, you know, mainstream espionage, intelligence, and crime thrillers. And I put you in that same category, Zoe, because, you know, close protection is pretty much being a security expert. And security experts, by their very nature, have to understand espionage and surveillance and electronic and or physical.
Libby, hold that
thought
1 second. Let me take a call. Hang on.
Okay.
Hold on.
Hello.
Area code 917, you're on the air live. Who's this?
Hi, my name is CJ Carpenter.
Well, hi, CJ Carpenter, another author, by the way, who will be interviewed soon. You're on the air live with Libby Fisher-Hellman and Zoe Sharp. Go ahead with your question.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I'm very curious because what you just brought up with the female and the male, writing females as opposed to male protagonists, and how I believe, you know, women are held up to a different standard than men in terms of the protagonist. I don't know, if you want to say maybe their language, how they respond to the work that they're doing. I find that really interesting because for many reasons, my protagonist that I write doesn't have the best language, and I got a lot of criticism for that. And I'm very curious if you think that, you know, men are held up to a different level, male writers writing about male protagonists held up to a different level.
Zoe, what do you think?
Yeah, hi, CJ. Thanks for the question. That's a very interesting point you raise. I think that I never expected that there would be any difference between male and female writers when I started doing this particular job. I mean, I've done lots of other jobs where there was very definitely a sort of a gender bias. And therefore, I think that there is definitely a bias towards what is acceptable for or from a woman writer. Not particularly from readers, I have to say, but I think sometimes from publishers. I was asked to edit a scene in one of my books, which, looking back, was probably the right decision, but I think the reasoning behind the edits was that from a female author, they would perhaps not find, readers wouldn't find the scene acceptable. And that's quite a difficult one to decide. Am I going to put my foot down and say, no, this is how I wrote it, or am I going to listen to that advice?
What I find, particularly when you're dealing with the issue of violence, a female, even in a thriller, is not prone to violence unless she's a villain. The female who is the hero of the thriller uses her wits or her cell phone or her computer and does not engage in violence. And I find that to be totally unacceptable.
Yeah, I can show you how to disable somebody with a cell phone.
I totally agree with that. But then again, I'm Irish, so I. but I totally I couldn't agree with you more on that.
Yeah, the other thing that when you're talking about espionage thrillers or close protection thrillers or thrillers in which the protagonist has to understand everything that a man would understand and more, there just aren't enough of us. In fact, this is Libby, by the way. Lindz and I were talking, we were emailing each other a few weeks ago, and I actually wrote a blog about it a couple of years ago, and I revised the blog, Where Are All the Female Thriller Authors? I mean, we can count on one hand those authors who are, there's Gail Lindz, there used to be Stella Rimington, I don't think she's publishing or haven't seen anything from her in a while. There's Zoe, there's Jamie Frevoletti, there's me, there was a couple, Leslie Silbert wrote one or two. That's it. I cannot find.
It's very difficult to find, especially Zoe. You know, your character is so strong. By the way, it's nice to talk to you. I haven't seen you since Bouchercon Albany. But what I find that was interesting is, and this is another question. If you don't mind me asking another question, is
not at all.
Who inspired? What female authors inspired you to take on such a challenging, wonderful character to you know, grow throughout, what is it, 12 books now?
Yes, I'm writing book 12 at the moment, mm-hmm. in the Charlie Fox series. I tried to read a lot of female authors. There weren't really that many female characters who really leapt out and inspired me. And as Libby's just said, the female characters, particularly the ones who utilized violence as part of their toolkit, if you like, for the job they were doing, tended to be portrayed as the baddies. They were either psychos or ice cold assassins. And how come that, you know, whenever a guy writes about somebody who's a nuclear scientist, she has to be 6 foot tall and beautiful? whereas the male
True.
Nuclear scientist can have a bald head and glasses, but,
exactly.
You know, the women have got to be stunning. So there is that constant pressure from all angles to have women who are not only smarter but also better looking and all the rest of it. But the female authors who inspired me, I have to say, people like Val McDermid, who was writing some fairly hard-edged thrillers, and I met her quite a while before I published my first novel, and she was very encouraging. So, you know, that was a nice author to meet.
You know, that's funny.
That's fantastic.
And for me, it was Sarah Paretsky, whose V.I. Warshawski would not, in her younger years, turn down a fist fight if she couldn't help it. She would be right in the middle of it.
I think that's wonderful. It's always very, I'm working on my third installment now, and it's always, may I ask one more question? I hate to be a nag. I'm just curious, Zoe, having such a series, how do you stay invigorated with the same character? I mean, she obviously goes into very different situations.
She is able to move from location and situation, which does help. But also, I have taken I took a break to write a standalone called The Blood Whisperer. And although it was a standalone novel, I stuck with Arthur, who had been through a bad time and had come out of that by necessity stronger. So an interesting, independent, self-sufficient female main character. And I've also another standalone that's just in the final stages that will be out in May, a book called Dancing on the Grave, which is another standalone, and this is kind of a UK set version of The Washington Sniper. And there are two female characters who play a very important role in the book.
Wow, that's exciting. Very exciting. I look forward. Thank you for taking the time for my phone call. And I just think you're the best. You're definitely have been an inspiration to my writing. And both of you are wonderful, and I really look forward to seeing both of you again. And good luck with the rest of your interview.
Thank you, and good luck with your book. In the third installment, you said. Well, that's great.
Yeah, I'm working on it now.
A writer seems to come into their own on their third book, I've always thought. So we'll be on the lookout.
This is a challenge. The third one, what do they say? Third luck's the charm. Between Never Alone and Hidden Vices, I'm looking forward to it. And I do actually, like Zoe, and I look toward very strong female characters, and because sometimes I don't know if I'm crossing a line or not. And so it's very helpful to me to see female writers and to completely allow their strengths and within the character and their writing, and it's very inspiring, so thank you.
CJ, thank you for calling in, and you will be with me on Wednesday, March 16 at 9 o'clock, and my guest co-host then is Deborah Katz Cassidy. So I'm looking
forward
to talking
to
you then. Thank you, CJ. Okay. Have a great afternoon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
You know, Zoe, CJ's questions bring up a thought, and I wanted to kind of explore it with you, and that is from the perspective of a female reader. We know that women readers will read Jack Reacher, they'll read Alex Berenson, they'll read Daniel Silva, they'll read all the male thriller authors, and I'm wondering whether there's been a kind of reverse prejudice of female authors who are reading female readers against female thriller authors. I don't know.
I want to answer that as a big reader.
Okay.
I want to answer that as a reader. You both of you know I don't own a television. I read about 400 books a year. I can tell you right now that only by the fact that there are more male thriller writers than there are female thriller writers. But I look for books that are authored by women who have very strong lead characters. If they have a strong female lead character, it's a bonus. So what you were talking about earlier, in particular, because both of you write thrillers and both of you have characters who are female, strong female women. I know, Zoe, it's the only way, you're right, it's the only way to describe it, but
yeah,
whose protagonists are women who are sharp, who know their crap, and who don't take any crap, okay? It's really hard to find those books that are authored by women and whose lead character is a woman as well. But I have no hesitancy whatsoever and do not judge those books any differently than I do any other book.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Then
okay.
Why are cozy mysteries so popular? Because women flock to them, and they have strong, maybe quirky kind of characters. And I don't see the same, you know, the same numbers of female readers reading female thriller authors. But maybe I'm wrong. I know in the UK it's a little different. I mean, you do have Val McDermott and you have Minette Walters, aside from Zoe Sharp, and you know there seems to be more tolerance abroad, and certainly the Norwegians.
But you also answered your own. You answer your own question, though, Libby. The fact of the matter is there are just way more female cozy authors. And I think the average reader will – they want to either – look, romance drives the market. Romantic suspense is now the top thing. Alpha men, and that's generally in romantic suspense, are the top-selling books in all of Amazon, no matter where you look. And this is in Kindle worlds and everything else. The top-selling books in Amazon are alpha men in romantic suspense or suspense
mm-hmm.
and romance, however you want to call it.
Right.
I think they're just, by the sheer numbers alone, there are not enough women thriller novelists with characters, their lead characters, their protagonists are women. I've heard it also said, and I was just reading on Facebook on a feed the other day that someone said that he feels like all of the thriller readers, the majority of thriller readers, are women. But mm-hmm. I think we can suppose that because most books are purchased by women.
Right. That's 80%, I believe. It's the
yeah.
number
so,
that people use.
So, but until more women are known with female characters, protagonists,
mm-hmm.
that you're
well,
always going to be the...
You know, they
sorry,
do say that female thriller authors, I mean, are coming into their own in TV. I'm not surprised that your series has been optioned, Zoe. I mean, you have Tess Gerritsen, Rosoli and Isles. You have
right.
Homeland with Carrie Matheson. You have a couple of other female-driven thriller shows. And why
mm-hmm.
TV should be leading the field, I don't know, but it does seem to be that way. Oh, and The Killing and The Bridge and those wonderful Nordic Scandinavian books that are now turning into series. What do you think about that, Zoe?
There doesn't seem to have been a time like this because of things like the original Netflix series.
Mm-hmm.
And there
right.
doesn't seem to have been a time when it was better to try and get things onto TV because there is so much more scope other than the sort of big networks. So I'm very hopeful that the actress and producer who has optioned the series can pull this together, and we'll see Charlie Fox on the screen of some description. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just surprised there aren't more females, women, writing thrillers of the nature that we're writing.
But I don't.
Yeah,
think
I think sometimes they are put off by the technicality of it.
That's what I was going to suggest too. I agree with you, Zoe. I think that writing a thriller is a very difficult thing. I mean, Libby, when you and I first spoke a long time ago, I think I told you mysteries are one thing. You know, mysteries are a roller coaster ride, and it can be pretty hairy on a roller coaster ride. But thrillers are a roller coaster ride in the dark, and you know, that's a different kind of ramping up the psychological terror of it all, never mind the physical terror that comes along in a mystery. So I think that it's technically a very difficult subgenre to write in, and that you and Zoe write so beautifully at it, that your characters are so well formed and so well defined, and the stories are rich. And
mm-hmm.
they're loaded. They're meaty stories. They're good stories. Yes, I'm aware that the protagonist is a woman, but quite frankly, it's the lead character. And after a while, you're not differentiating between a male character and a female character as far as the story goes. It's just a damn fine piece of writing. I wish everybody felt like that, but they don't.
I do too. I will tell you something very funny. My 95-year-old mother read a draft of Jump Cut before it came out, and she's a voracious mystery reader and probably one of the reasons why I'm writing mysteries. And her only comment was, yeah, it's good, but did you have to have all that technical information?
Yeah, but you kind of do. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, of course you
do.
You
kind of
do.
You have to.
Yeah, I totally
I will tell you that J. Carson Black tells me that when she started doing press filing, she's very, very shy. She said people were stunned to find out that it was a female writer because she writes about an ex-spec ops guy who is a paid assassin for hire. And she's very technical in her books. The language and the violence are there. So a lot of readers assume that she was a man. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's bad to assume anything. But I don't know if I were her, would I have taken that as a compliment or not? I don't know. What do you think, Zoe?
Well, I sometimes thought a couple of years ago, I thought, I think I made a mistake when I was originally going into writing, crime thrillers, because that's how I would, categorize what I do. It's a crime thriller. Maybe I should have looked at using initials, or it was about the time when a lot of writers were rebranding themselves under initials rather than using their full names. And now I've come away from that feeling and thought, no, I'll write under my real name, and if people don't like it, then that's more their problem than mine.
I agree.
I do try and include the technicalities, and I hope I've got the authenticity, because a lot of the stuff I write about, I've tried to make sure I have some kind of practical experience. So
you have that
sort of a certain level of authority about the subject. But it's amazing, people are always saying about authors making mistakes with guns. More authors, I find, make mistakes with cars. And although you can't relate that every author will have fired a handgun, most of them can drive.
That's an interesting thought. We are slowly ticking down out of time. I want to, first of all, thank my guest co-host today, the award-winning best-selling author, Libby Fisher-Hellman. Please go and look at her website at libbyhellman.com. And for God's sakes, go and buy her book, Jump Cut. Publishers Weekly gave it a starred review, which is so hard to come by, especially for crime thrillers. It is a very difficult thing to come by. But boy, out of the chute, they were first to jump on it. You've also gotten reviews from who else that you got starred
Kirkus
reviews on?
And Booklist, and they were all good.
Oh, they were all wonderful, yeah. So, and our own book review crew has raved about it. As a matter of fact, I think all the reviewers have read it. It's a fantastic book. Libby's going to be my guest later on, but she's also coming to Southwest Florida on book tour. If you're around here in Lee County where I am, please make sure you get in touch with me so I can hook you up and introduce you to my friend Libby Fisher-Hellman. Libby, thank you so much for spending the time talking with
Zoe
and I today. And happy Women's History Month, and kick ass, girlfriend, okay? Talk to you later.
I'll try. Thanks, Zoe. Bye.
Bye, Libby.
Thanks, Libby.
And to my wonderful dear friend across the pond, Zoe Sharp, who writes some of the best crime thrillers that I've ever read, the Charlie Fox series, but I've also read the other books that she's mentioned that are yet to come out. Dancing on the Grave particularly is a very fine, very twisted piece of work from Zoe Sharp. Please go to her website at zoesharp.com. The website is packed full of information that you can go in and easily find what you want to find out about. There's all kinds of wonderful things there. And Zoe, you're a prolific blogger, and you really enjoy blogging with your readers, don't you? For your readers.
Yes, I blog regularly on a site called Murder Is Everywhere, and do occasional blogs. I am planning on blogging more on my own website on zoesharp.com as well. So
and please go and sign up for her newsletter. I promise you, when you get it, you're going to love it, because Zoe even gives her own book list, books that she's reading and that she's recommending. So if you want to hear from the pro on what you should be reading, she's going to give you a nice variety of books. Zoe, I can't wait to see you. When is the next time you're in the States for a conference?
I will be coming across for BoucherCon in New Orleans towards the end of the year. And hopefully I'll be doing a little bit of touring after that as well. So,
I can't wait. Okay, we'll have to talk and see if we can get you down here to Southwest Florida too, okay?
Oh, that would be cool.
It's the perfect time to come down. It's when all of our snowbirds are here and all the book places are packed with people. So thank you so much. Where can we find you on social media besides your website at zoesharp.com?
Yep, I'm on Twitter at Author Zoe Sharp and the same on Facebook.
Very good. Thank you so much. You have really rocked the hour. I've learned so much from you, and I learn something new all the time with my guests. Thank you so much. Will you come back on and maybe turn at the mic and do an interview? I would love
Absolutely.
To have that happen. That would be fun. Thank you so much, and I'm sending little positive wishes for the kitty cat to get better, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Zoe. And before Zoe signs off tomorrow night, my guest is the absolutely inimitable, incomparable Jeffrey Deaver. He's back for an encore interview with me and only me. I'm so happy to say that's 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific time. Wednesday, we have three fantastic romance authors. And on Friday, my dear friend, I cannot wait to introduce you to Tony McKee-Causey and her new book, The Saints of the Lost and Found. Zoe Sharp, have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Pam. You too.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
And thank you all for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Goodbye.